As a reminder, members of the public may access meeting materials and this committee's activities via the NCHE website at www.nche.nevada.edu. For those desiring to follow the committee's work, you may subscribe to the meeting notices on the NCHE website. I'll turn to Associate General Counsel King for roll call.
Ms. Leisha Allison? Dr. Kavita Batra?
Present.
Chancellor Charlton?
Present.
Dr. Stephanie Coleman?
Present.
Mr. Jordan Fichette? Ms. Erin Frock? Dr. Tabor Griswold?
Present.
Chair Gunn?
Present.
Ms. Christine Hall?
Present.
Mr. Sean Mabanta?
Present.
Mr. James Martinez? Mr. Martinez is absent. Mr. Jose Melendez?
Linda?
Oh, yeah.
Linda, sorry to interrupt. Chris Nielsen, I'm filling in for Jimmy Martin. Jimmy's in his place, so I am present.
Okay, we'll have the record reflect that Mr. Chris Nielsen is here as a designee for Mr. Martinez.
Thank you.
Mr. Jose Melendez? Dr. Allison Netsky? Ms. Michelle Sposito?
Present.
Ms. Lindsay Wolterbeek? Chair, you have a quorum?
All right, thank you. Associate General Counsel King, I will turn back to you for agenda item one, public comment.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Linda King, for the record. For those members of the public who are wishing to submit public comment via telephone, you may do so by calling 1-669-900-9128 and enter meeting ID 910-0378-4066 and then enter passcode 777-777. Public comment will be taken this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Persons making comments will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their last name. The task force chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being considered. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Good morning, Kent Irvin, ERVIN for the Nevada Faculty Alliance. The NFA is the independent statewide association of faculty at NCHE colleges and universities. We work to empower faculty to be fully engaged in our mission to help students succeed. Empowerment includes being free of workplace harassment or power-based misconduct. And if misconduct does occur, empowerment means having it promptly and justly addressed. Your recent climate survey showed the magnitude of the problems on the student side. At NFA, we hear from our constituents at multiple institutions about lacking responses to complaints from the Equal Opportunity and Title IX offices, most often at UNR. UNR's EO Title IX office has made recent progress in clearing its backlog of over 100 cases and now posts monthly case numbers. From October 2023 through April 2024, the dashboard showed that no active investigations were closed. Then in May, a majority were found to have no violation and no others were closed. We do not know how long investigations take to be resolved or how often action is taken. We still have not seen the report from TNG consultants on the operation of the offices, which was promised by the UNR administration to the UNR Faculty Senate many months ago. Justice denied is justice delayed. If a case goes unresolved, it means a bad actor may be continuing to act badly. It is traumatic for the complainant because no apparent action is being taken, and for the respondent because even a completely false accusation puts them under a cloud of suspicion and worry. After months of hanging, getting a vague notice that the case has been closed with no further information or action hardly provides closure. We ask you as a group to take steps to solve these problems. You should formally recommend that the Board of Regents require uniform reporting from every institution, including data on the number of discrimination in Title IX complaints, the time required for the parties to be notified, time until they are interviewed, and the time to closing the case categorized by type and severity of complaint and the outcomes. The annual reports provided by the University of Michigan can serve as models for reporting statistics for both students and employees, and the link is in my written submission. Only with full, transparent, and system-wide reporting can systematic problems, such as the recent huge backlog of cases at UNR, be identified and fixed. Again, justice delayed is justice denied. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your work in this area.
Is there any further public comment in Reno? Seeing none, we'll move to Las Vegas. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, SCS, do we have any callers on the line?
There are no callers at this time.
Thank you. And could staff in Reno indicate whether or not there was any public comment received through the online portal?
They're checking on it.
Thank you.
Any through the public, any through the portal?
Public comment through the online process?
Rick should be doing it now.
Mine should be there.
Rick should be doing it in the south. I don't have any public comment here.
We don't see any at this time.
Thank you. Chair, that concludes public comment.
Thank you. Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Agenda item two is a chair's report. I'm pleased to provide an update on the task force initiatives since we last met. I'd be honored of presenting our survey findings to the Board of Regents on July 9th. The purpose of that presentation was to deliver and discuss those results. Conversation centered on the quantity of survey participants, timing of the survey, how students are surveyed, and further data analysis. I'm pleased to share that the board approved additional funding through the Chancellor's Office for additional survey data analysis that we'll discuss later today in our meeting. A second item by way of update was a presentation to the Nevada Legislature's Joint Interim Committee on Education on last Thursday, on June 20th. I appreciate the Chancellor co-presenting that information with me. The point of the presentation was to deliver an overview and chronology of our work thus far. We listed major milestones, and we had a brief conversation as well about the survey findings, including the results strategies for increasing participation, including incentives at the institutional level when we revisit the survey in 2 years. At that meeting, I listed the task force members, and I failed to mention my outstanding colleague, Dr. Stephanie Coleman, who serves as Vice President of Student Affairs at Nevada State, so my apology for that omission. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that publicly here. Finally, I wanted to frame some of our conversation today. In addition to the survey, that's one component of our work, this task force is charged with considering programs across institutions, possible policy recommendations, awareness campaigns, and advocacy for positions and or personnel. As we continue to consider additional survey data and begin to strategize for next steps over the next 2 years, we have time to turn our attention to these other items. The items that we consider should be correlated with the way that they are described in AB 245, so I recommend continuing to be familiar with the sections and protocols in that legislation. With that, we'll turn to agenda item 3, approval of the minutes. The minutes from the March 26th meeting were attached to your agenda packet. Does anyone have any proposed corrections or clarifications? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
I second that.
Dr. Griswold, was that you seconding?
Yes, it was.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. All right, the motion carries, the minutes are approved. All right, turning to agenda item 4, inventory of services and a gap analysis. This is the beginning of a critical discussion, or really step 2 of a critical discussion about the services, programs, processes, personnel in place across our institutions. This item is a follow-up discussion and gaps analysis based on presentations at our previous meeting from representatives from the University of Nevada, Reno, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the College of Southern Nevada, Great Basin College, Nevada State University, Truckee Meadows Community College, and Western Nevada College regarding these services on campus for prevention, awareness, and for outreach to victims of power-based violence. We have the definition here again. Power-based violence refers to any form of interpersonal violence intended to pressure, control, intimidate, or harm another person through the assertion of power over the person. This term includes, without limitation, dating violence, domestic violence, family violence, gender-based violence, violence based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression, sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual exploitation, stalking, and or observations of another person who is naked or engaging in sexual activity without their consent, including without limitation voyeurism. So under that definition, we received presentations from our colleagues across institutions about the services offered. The presentations were extremely informative and important in helping frame this agenda item. One of the questions that I hope we can discuss today is your observations about services offered, additional steps we need to take to gather that information, and preliminary strategies on how we might do that. And if anyone has any thoughts on a preliminary gap analysis, we can discuss that too. Reviewing the presentations for today, I thought I would highlight a few of the on-campus and off-campus connections of each institution. Again, these presentations are linked in the material packet for today, so you have access to those electronically. Starting with UNLV, on-campus is the care center that offers a variety of robust, important, critical services, including a training institute, education, advocacy, and much more. While our colleagues did not overtly mention off-campus connections, that is an area where we could follow up for clarification. Turning to UNR, the presentation centered on the University Police Department lens through, and they spoke about the Office of Equal Opportunity and Title IX, referral services, crisis intervention, therapy, legal, medical, and others. They mentioned a UPD victim service coordinator, and they outreach with Nevada Cares about sexual about relationship violence, sexual assault, and stalking. Specifically for UNR's off-campus connections, they mentioned the Domestic Violence Violence Resource Center and Sexual Assault Support Services, among other connections with which they liaise for students on campus. Turning to CSN, the presentation centered on counseling and advocacy centers across their campuses, their Title IX office, and mental health services for students. Turning to GBC, they referred to survey results from a 2019 and 2022 survey. They also referred to their behavioral intervention team, Title IX office and staff, and housing resident advisors. They highlighted a 2024 awareness campaign, and they indicated they offered telepsychiatry for students. Turning to Nevada State University, the presentation highlighted the Title IX office, employee training, the care team on campus, it's different from the Nevada Care Center, counseling services, and emergency housing. I distinguish between the care team on campus and the care center because Nevada State collaborates with the external care center for support services, education, awareness, and data collection. Turning to TMCC, the presentation centered on personal counseling for students. Their great mascot, the Wizard Wellness 24/7 support line. They also offer telepsychiatry, and they spoke about their Title IX office. Regarding their external connections, they have an MOU with the Crisis Support Centers of Nevada, and this includes a campus victim advocate, tabling, and awareness events. Finally, turning to WNC, the presentation highlighted the 24/7 Wildcat Wellness Line for students, UPD services, legal support, intake services for reports, and information dissemination. They referred to their off-campus connection with the Campus Victim Advocate Program that provides free support and services to survivors of power-based violence. WNC partners with the Crisis Support Services of Nevada and provides on-campus and off-campus resources and referrals. So with that very brief overview and given the presentations from our last meeting, a couple of questions arise. And again, I welcome discussion and thoughts on strategizing with next steps. The first question would be, do we have enough information? And if not, how do we gather more information to ensure that we have an accurate record of the programs and processes and supports offered across our institutions? I welcome members' thoughts on that question. So again, how would we strategize to ensure we have the most comprehensive, current, accurate information about programs and services across our institutions?
Tabor Griswold, for the record. The first thought that I'd had was establishing probably what is the staffing that's in each area so we can kind of have a feel for the counseling, faculty, interactions, the consortium with other organizations. That way we kind of have a scope so that we're not just zeroing in on a specific group such as Title IX. We need to have the broader spectrum.
Elizabeth Gunn, for the record. Thank you, Dr. Griswold. That is something we can certainly consider. That is something that we can easily count and ask the institutions to help us count. So thank you for that. Other ideas on how we might create an accurate current account of programs and services.
Stephanie Coleman, for the record.
This is Allison Netsky.
Stephanie Coleman, for the record. I definitely like the idea of establishing the staffing. Is it possible that we could also request maybe some type of reporting, you know, from these areas to better gauge what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis? It was kind of struck out for me to hear UNR talk about the amount of reports that they had, and that made me think, are they understaffed that someone cannot, you know, address these reports or these incidents? So some type of regular report, you know, regarding, you know, what, how many complaints are you hearing? you know, how are you, what is the timeliness of you responding to these complaints, just to better gauge how busy everyone is on their campus?
Thank you for that, Dr. Coleman. Dr. Netsky?
I also wonder if there are underreported resources that people are utilizing. You know, for example, on the UNLV side, I missed it, but I didn't hear talks of, you know, student health, the counseling center, the practice, and others that are, you know, some go-to places for health services and mental health services. And I wonder if those are, while they may not be official, they may be widely used resources for individuals. And I'm not sure if surveying the various groups versus a survey of faculty or students, which I think obviously is a much bigger project. But I'm concerned that we're missing some areas.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you for that feedback, Dr. Netsky. I think that's important. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is identify how we can, we know there's missing pieces here. Could you repeat what the recommendation of how to get that data?
So I think you could look at it from two lenses. One, if we're thinking, you know, common places that individuals would go would be health services or various mental health service groups, which I know there are multiple on different campuses that are, you know, that are service groups, like the practice at UNLV, and I know there's others on the other campuses. We could survey, you know, those clinicians to say, you know, do you think this is a utilized resource? Perhaps it would be more difficult for them to quantify that. But on the flip side, this could be a tool for an opportunity to be able to query faculty and students and staff to be able to say, where do you go? Or where do you refer people to? And I think that would probably uncover even other areas that we're not thinking about or haven't been discussed here today.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you so much for clarifying. That's helpful. Appreciate it.
Christina Hall, for the record, just based on the previous comment, one way that we may be able to track when folks are connecting with resources outside of the most common for power-based violence, maybe we can track how many of those resources are referring to the more common. So for example, on UNLV campus, maybe we can track how many referrals we receive from the counseling center. And even if those students decide not to access our services, we can still track that they've been referred to our services. So we can kind of see, and we can keep track where those referrals are coming from. So we can see that we're getting a good number of referrals from the practice, but not from the counseling center. So is there a lack of communication? Do they not know that the resource exists? Those types of things. Could be one way that we can get at sort of that data, maybe. And I think one thing that might be helpful would be to consolidate all of this information that in a place where people will see it, so that they know what those resources are available on each campus. And I don't know what that would be. I'm not as in tune with the student population or faculty and staff population to know exactly would be the best place for that information to live. But I think that's something that we could look into.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. I appreciate the, Elizabeth Gunn, for the record. Thank you. I appreciate the feedback. I think that is that speaks to the spirit of the task force, is to think how to bring together the information across institutions for not only for information gathering, but to share the information with our constituencies. So thank you. Other ideas?
This is Michelle Esposito. At least at UNLV, the Equal Employment and Title IX office does have a list of resources that are provided to complainants or individuals who contact the Title IX office. And we do have to provide like those supportive measures under Title IX. So I would imagine that every Title IX office across all the NCHE institutions does have a list of resources that we would refer individuals to. And mostly on campus, and then, you know, perhaps like Care Center would have information about off-campus referrals.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you so much. That's helpful feedback as well.
And this is Jose Melendres. Apologies for joining late, but people higher than me had me in their meetings, so we had to visit there. And we also have the director of the Office of Civil Rights from the Department of Health and Human Services on campus today, and we had a meeting with our Nevada Minority Health and Equity Coalition today. So good things happening there. But I agree. I think I know in some of the work I've done in the past, the website idea, I think, is critical, where people can go to and find, you know, all the services and everything and who's doing what, all of that, kind of one place where they can go to. And then they're critical, I think, having links to the different departments, whoever provides different services from our respective campuses. The other thing, and I don't know how we would want to think about this, but obviously any off-campus resources, things like that, that would be available, you know, organizations or partners who do this kind of work, that would be available, and thinking about what that partnership can look like with those community-based groups and NCHE and our respective institutions. So I think that's definitely, I know I've seen that work in the past, but definitely requires a lot of, I guess it would require a lot of time on our part in terms of community engagement work and, you know, establishing those partnerships so that they, especially if they're off campus, so that they would have a good understanding of what this task force and how we're trying to approach it and what we can actually provide in terms of services for anybody that might come to this and needing those services. So I definitely would support something like that we could move forward on and do that. And I know the task would be how we pull all this together from all of the different institutions and provide that safe space for folks to be able to access.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you, Mr. Melendez, and we certainly understand the prior commitment. So appreciate the feedback and the thoughtful input. Any other ideas on how we might strategize and bring together this information?
This is Dr. Kavita Batra for records. I know we are right now brainstorming the ideas like how we are going to collect those data and make that data aggregate to inform the public. But down the road, I would also say that there should be a public-facing dashboard on the website that will actually inform what is going on, like some quantitative measures on the dashboard that public can access.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you, Dr. Batra. I think that sounds like an exceptional end goal of this discussion. Thank you.
Deborah Griswold, for the record. I do believe that there were references in the survey that we administered, and I think that we should have Dr. Dahir also take a look at the data in the survey to see what resources the students were either talking about or referencing in context. At least it would give us some actual input from the students and then be able to build on it when we have all the information from our campus organizations and their interconnections to off-campus organizations. That's where that whole referral business comes in. Thank you.
Elizabeth Gunn. Thank you, Dr. Griswold. I think that's an excellent strategy we can add to the list here. Just summarizing very quickly, so far, the overarching ideas are counting personnel under the broad field of power-based violence, counting referrals, creating a repository or public-facing dashboard, further analysis of the survey data, and again, same as the repository, consolidating information in one place for ease of analysis and access. Before we move on, any other strategies for an accurate account of our programs, processes, resources? All right, thank you for your input on that. Still with agenda item 4 and the gap analysis, based on the presentation of information, any preliminary rough draft ideas of what we might see missing or something that is consistent across institutions? Obviously, for example, UPD is consistent across institutions, but any other consistencies or gaps, just from an initial glance here, that we might see it by way of first very rough analysis?
Tabor Griswold, for the record. I do believe that actually surveying our websites and those interconnections, yes, it is a very tedious process. But as I almost always use that a tool in some sort of a preliminary analysis, I don't think it should be overlooked. I just think it should be actually tracked.
For the record, Patty Charlton, I have a question. This might actually be a good one for Dr. Coleman. So I know one of the areas that we have is, and that's because of your capacity with student affairs and the group, but one of the areas that I know is required under the Clery Act are the campus safety or security advocates or those authorities. And so what I wonder is, do we have or do you think that perhaps adding an element of training so that we ensure that all of those individuals, whether connected either formally or either indirectly with students and or faculty and staff, if we've got enough in the way of robust communication and training for them to see this pipeline as another area that needs to be reported and how they do that appropriately? Just a question.
Stephanie Coleman, for the record, and you're referring to the CSAs, and I think that is a great idea. The challenge that the smaller campuses may have is that they're smaller campuses and that they won't have enough individuals. But that doesn't mean that we still can't promote and ask and get them ready for, you know, this type of work. But I do like the idea of arming them with some additional training to also be a source to receive information from students.
Christina Hall, for the record, I also wanted to, that's an excellent question. I wanted to mention that the care center on UNLV campus, our training for our advocates is nationally certified with the National Advocate Credentialing Program. It's a 45 plus hour training, but a good chunk of that is conducted online through Canvas and could potentially meet a gap. I know for the Nevada revised statutes, currently there is only a requirement for victim advocates to have 20 hours of training. So if we did a kind of shortened version that can be accessed online, it may fill that gap for those smaller campuses. And the Care Center would be happy to support in those efforts.
Herbert will come to those who help.
Elizabeth Gunn, for the record, thank you both for that information, feedback, and thoughtfulness about the issue. A question for Ms. Hall and or Mr. Mavanta. Are you all aware of any coordination across campuses for the advocates on campus? For example, is there a routine meeting, or do you all have a network?
This is Christina. A network, I don't think we currently have. However, the care center currently supports College of Southern Nevada and Nevada State University and helps support UNR Cares in developing their victim advocacy program that they launched. So I think that's something that we could do very easily, create a victim collaboration group that can be a place where we can share information, share resources. I know that in the community in Southern Nevada, there's a victim advocacy group for community advocates. I think we can very easily do the same thing for campus-based advocates as well.
Hi, Sean Mabonta for the record. I completely agree with Ms. Christina Hall. I think university collaboration with advocates would be very beneficial, especially with in Northern Nevada and Reno, we also have a group of advocates, call it like the advocate committee or something that meets, I think bi-monthly, and it really helps out in terms of collaboration with sharing events that are going on, new support groups that are starting up, and new resources that we are providing, and just keeps all of us up to date on the newest happenings, especially with advocacy organizations changing every day, honestly. So.
Elizabeth Gunn, thank you both for the answers. Mr. Babanta, do you have a sense of how often that group meets and who's involved, just by title or institution?
Yeah, of course. Sean Mabonta for the record. So we meet either bi-monthly or quarterly, and the advocates consist of a bunch of local advocacy organizations in Reno. So organizations like Safe Embrace, us at Sexual Assault Support Services, Domestic Violence Resource Center, Tu Casa Latina, and a lot more organizations that I can't name off the top of my head. But yeah, I believe it is bi-monthly. So once a month we have a standard meeting where we're all just in a room discussing, and the next month that we meet is a tour of one of our organization's facilities and seeing what resources they provide and actually touring this facility. So we know what resource we're referring to when we refer our survivors to that resource.
Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Thank you for the additional information. Any other final thoughts on the existing services, coordination of that, and or areas that we might want to turn our attention by way of a gap or needs analysis?
This is Tabor Griswold. I'd like to add to my previous comment. One of the tools that we do have that could be used once we have identified the websites is a tool called Google Analytics, where we could ask the individual properties if they could give us the web hits so that we could actually see. That would give us access, not necessarily the cases, but, you know, that big question is, what about people they don't actually contact? That doesn't mean that they didn't actually try and access the website and look at it and read about it. And we can ask for those through the web management group. I used to be able to do the Google Analytics. That's why I know enough about it. I'd go out there, I'd pull up my website, and I would look using search criteria for all of the links that I would have. So I know it can be done. And this would not be an easy task because there's a lot of other priorities for people who are developing websites, who are changing websites, but it might be something that it can give us a true, it's the access to information part of this as opposed to actual case counts that have been processed. Thank you.
Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Thank you for the additional thought, Dr. Griswold. We'll certainly add that to the list of possibilities to analyze here. So, all right, we'll continue with this exercise and strategizing and analysis. We have some great ideas here to continue our work. So I appreciate everyone's thoughtfulness and feedback on agenda item 4. We'll turn to agenda item 5, additional data needs. So as you all know, we analyzed our survey data at our previous meeting. We had a little over 5,000 students respond, 990 from UNR, a little over 3,000 from UNLV, 900 or so from CSN, 100 or so from Nevada State University, 100 or so from GBC, 200 plus from TMCC, and a little over 50 from WNC. There are ways to continue to analyze and deaggregate the data. And thanks to the Board of Regents and the Chancellor and her office, we now have funding for some further analysis with our colleagues at the UNR Survey Center. So the conversation on the table for this item is, what additional data needs do we have for analyzing the 2023 climate survey? A couple of ideas, disaggregating data by demographics, where possible and appropriate. So we could look at some possible correlations between demographics and instances of power-based violence and or perceptions of our climate. We could consider disaggregating data by institution where appropriate. Some of the institutions, the number of respondents is probably not appropriate to do that because we want to protect the survey takers and the de-identification of data. And with that, I open it for conversation about other ways that we might want to look at the data with the additional funding. So anyone has any thoughts, recommendations, strategies, considerations? Feel free to share.
Stephanie Coleman for the record. I wasn't at the last meeting, so this may be giving me some background information. So there was just one way that the data from the survey was analyzed. And so now with additional resources, we can pick it apart a little more is what I'm hearing you say. It wasn't already disaggregated by campuses. It was just total number of students taking the survey?
Elizabeth Gunn, in some instances, varied by question. In some instance, well, that's not true. Let me back up. There was a drop-down menu for students to select their institution. So we have that information by institution. The survey results presented a compilation or brought together all of the survey takers' answers. And in some questions, it's already presented by institution. And if I recall correctly, without glancing at the survey, Dr. Griswold may remember this in an ironclad way. Some questions are simply about general perception or general experiences, and they might not be identified by institution. So for example, if we disaggregated the data by institution, while we already have that in some areas, it would give us further analysis on the institutions where a large number of students responded. And or if we disaggregated the data by demographics, again, it could give us a chance to discuss whether a certain demographic of students experienced or did not experience a certain perception or instance of power-based violence. We don't have the latter for sure. We have the demographics of the students who took surveys, but we don't have any correlations with answers to other questions.
This is Dr. Kavita Batra for records. I have seen that presentation as well as I remember. I think at some places the variables were taken as nominal variables, like categorical variables, and at some places it was taken as continuous variables. So for that reason, I think ANOVA was also conducted. So if we have ability to do ANOVA, which was conducted previously, we could see the interaction effect now if the dependent variable was continuous, of course. But now, since you are talking about doing the subgroup analysis by different demographic variables, I think it will be intriguing to know like how these variables play into interaction of the perception of the respondents. So I think that will be somewhat complex analysis to conduct with like a mixed method approach, like mixed models, sorry.
Tabor Griswold for the record. I want to follow up on that comment with two points. One, the big overall takeaway of this survey was that most of the students didn't feel compelled to answer it. There is an option to look to see how many opened it and didn't do anything. And we didn't ask Dr. Dahir for that number because that isn't a completed survey. But that means they did open it up, look at it. The other part is most that when you don't have a significant problem, that is a result in its own. So by doing the further analysis, it is more to determine why these people chose to answer the survey. Demographics is the easiest criteria for being able to separate the variables as previously discussed. Thank you very much.
Stephanie Coleman for the record. One of the variables or the variables so we can disaggregate by demographic, athlete, active student on campus, housing student, does it get down to that granular type of ask of the students regarding who they are?
Elizabeth Gunn, we have some, there were some demographic questions toward the end of the survey, and I would have to refer back to the survey for the exact options and variables in the survey. I don't recall, athlete does not ring a bell right offhand, but it might be there. We certainly have gender identity, identity at birth, race, ethnicity, economic status, and so forth. We also have on and off campus as well, and some of the questions, the questions asked where, if there was an instance or perception, where that took place, was it online, was it in, you know, in person? So that is both in the demographic section, and some of those online off campus are dispersed throughout the survey.
This is Dr. Batra again. I would like to add that we can possibly do an intersectional analysis, like among the subgroups, for example, if the person is Black and belonging to gender minority, so we can create subgroups from the existing data and see like how, what are the variations in the different intersectional axes of inequality.
Elizabeth Gunn for the record. This is why it's invaluable to have the expertise represented here on the task force. We have a biostatistician weighing in. Thank you, Dr. Batra. Thank you, Dr. Griswold, for your expertise as well. The right people at the table.
Chair, Jose Melendres, I have a quick question.
Please go ahead.
So in this process, I'm just wondering, because it's something that in this process of engaging with the students and folks, was there anything, and I apologize because I'm not remembering off the top of my head with the survey and all that, but have we identified, have there been any challenges about the actual like reporting process? Because I know some of the other areas that I'm working in, it's been, there's been questions about how, when something happens, how students go about reporting it, or do they feel comfortable reporting, has anything been identified like that in regards to this task force, that the challenges if students find it difficult or not comfortable reporting, anything like that that might have come out in this?
Yes, Elizabeth Gunn for the record. Yes, there were 11 sections of the survey, and reporting was a component of the survey. And in the qualitative feedback from students, when we coded that information, I think we had five or so categories where we coded the qualitative information. Anyway, procedural justice and reporting rose to the top to make its own category. So that's definitely on the students' minds. So that could be an area that we further explore as well if we dig into the survey a little bit deeper.
Yeah, because I think that it's definitely something to look at, because I know in some of the around other issues that we've been working with at UNLV, that has really come to the forefront in terms of whether or not students feel comfortable reporting or having a better understanding of the process of that. And so I just think it's something in terms of from an education lens, area where we could do some training. That might be something that I would put out there for us to consider as an outcome of something that we could do in regards to like training folks, providing that kind of information about how you go about reporting something when unfortunately, or if something like that happens, so that students know, every point of access, right? All right. And I guess I would say that for faculty as well, anybody on campus that might not feel comfortable or not understand the process of how to go about reporting something. So, and I know there's things in place, but I think it's just being very intentional about folks, making sure folks understand that process.
Elizabeth Gunn, for the record, thank you for that feedback. That is certainly in the legislation. I've got a few sections memorized. Section 8 speaks to prevention programming and recommendations that we might make to the Board of Regents about that. And this correlates to our discussion today about the gap analysis. What might we want to see in terms of what's already being done? Can we capture that? And can we analyze and make recommendations? And to map that to survey results. So if we're seeing a need for centralized data repository and students are indicating that they're struggling to report, we certainly can identify a need there. So that's excellent in the direction we're headed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Gunn again for the record. So in terms of agenda item 5, we've had some discussion, additional data analysis according to demographics, Dr. Batra mentioned an ANOVA and another statistical analysis I couldn't catch. So I will reach out to you, look at the minutes, mixed message,
okay, yes.
Methods. There was a third something, but anyway, I will rely on your expertise.
Intersectional analysis, and yeah, I can write a paragraph and I can give that to you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. There's also consideration of, instead of looking at maybe in addition to looking at demographics, looking at topic areas like reporting. Any further thoughts before we close this agenda item? All right, thank you all for your thoughts and feedback on this. This gives us some good direction for next steps. Turning to agenda item 6, our meeting schedule. Nevada law provides that the task force shall meet at least once each quarter and may meet at other times upon the call of the chair or a majority of the members of the task force. To assist the task force members planning and to support consistent attendance, the chair will discuss setting fixed or general pattern for quarterly meetings, dates, and may poll the task force members to determine the best quarterly meeting dates and times. So I recommend a general pattern to meet quarterly that would follow the first couple of years of the task force's meeting pattern. So for example, it's June, we might meet in September, December, January, March, and again in June. So if we continue to meet quarterly to coordinate all of our schedules. Do any members of the task force have any observations, thoughts on this agenda item?
Stephanie Coleman, for the record. I like the schedule that you laid out. And I'm wondering, I'm thinking about the two key events that really kind of encapsulate this group, which is October is Domestic Violence Month, and then we would meet, so then we meet in September. So I like the fact that we're meeting before, you know, that monthly recognition. And then April is Sexual Awareness, Sexual Assault Month. And I believe we would be meeting the month ahead. So I like the time frame. I definitely support that type of time frame because, you know, maybe there's some things that this task force could do to support the campuses, you know, in highlighting those two important months. Or is this the task force kind of poking the different campuses to highlight these two important events happening, you know, across the nation? So I definitely support your schedule.
Tabor Griswold, for the record, I think we should put also together a calendar for scheduling the process for the next survey in 2 years. That's not just the quarterly meetings, but we set that up as part of one of the agenda items so that we don't run into the situation that we did in the last one where the IT part of it is not, has to be redone again. And we don't want that to slow it down. Thank you.
Linda King, for the record. Chair, you couldn't, and that's an excellent point, you would need to consider that as an agenda item for your next meeting as new business.
Stephanie Coleman, for the record, I have a question about the second survey. Will we be given the opportunity to add questions or remove questions to the survey, or is it the exact same survey?
Linda King, for the record. The survey would be subject to the task force review again and modifications, and also it would, under the law, needs to be made available to the public. For public comment, so it would come forth to the task force for modifications. But first of all, the board has to approve that another survey could be administered and then have to have the funds to do so.
Elizabeth Gunn, for the record. So agenda item 6, meeting schedule. We have proposed a general pattern to meet quarterly. So forthcoming meetings would be generally September, December, March, and June. If there's no further discussion, and we would set our meetings through a poll to determine availability. If there's no further observations or discussion, is there a motion to approve this proposal?
Motion to approve the schedule as noted.
Second, Jose.
Okay, Mr. Melendez, second. All in favor? Aye.
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 All those opposed? The schedule and pattern and motion carries. Turning to agenda item 7, items for consideration, agenda item 7, new business. Items for consideration at future meetings may be suggested. Any discussion of an item under new business is limited to description and clarification of the subject matter of the item, which may include reasons for the request. No substantive discussion may occur at this meeting on new business. It sounds like we already have one new item. Dr. Griswold, would you like to repeat that so we get it under this agenda item?
Tabor Griswold, for the record, thank you. Yes, we need to schedule out the whole survey administration process, and it does begin with, as you said, the question to the board of any changes, and then the approval and the release and setting the dates. I was more concerned that the actual time of administration doesn't interfere with that process to be able to get the survey out the door. So I would say we target the semester that we want to administer the survey in, and then back up from it that whole process of changes, modifications, and approvals. Thank you.
Patty Charlton, for the record, I'd like to just add that I think that there might be an opportunity for us to do some marketing around awareness, maybe not marketing, but an awareness, either campaign or working with the campuses to ensure that we've got, that people are aware of, one, the task force also, but also getting out ahead of any survey that might come up again, because I think that I think that might have contributed to the low participation rate, and find ways to incentivize participation and taking of the survey.
This is Dr. Kavita Batra again. So if you need any help in the dissemination of survey, I'm the president of Nevada Public Health Association, so I can also disseminate that through our newsletter, which is coming up like in the month of July. But maybe I can do a separate announcement also.
Stephanie Coleman, for the record, I want to add to Chancellor Charlton's comment regarding awareness, and wondering if that can be part of new business to discuss, because I'm wondering, is awareness equal at all campuses? You know, is there some way that we can, you know, I don't want to say minimum awareness is X, but I do wonder if we're all really promoting and saying, and not necessarily saying, but are we promoting and trying to inform, you know, the campus communities at the same tip? And is there some way that this body could support campuses that, you know, just don't have the resources to really get in front of this? Because, you know, granted, I didn't look at all of the PowerPoint presentations, but just in the quick read here, we're great on the response if something should happen. I did not see as much awareness and prevention being proactive, and it always breaks my heart to hear someone didn't know where to go. And, you know, maybe, again, that could be a lens that we really hone in on, ensuring that these campuses have reached out to as many students as possible. So, again, just the equity of, are we seeing the same message? Is everybody getting the same information? And, you know, can we help with, when do you get that information? I'm not saying that you have to table every day. That's not what I'm saying. But definitely, how are you tabling?
Elizabeth Gunn, for the record. Any additional suggestions for new business? I'll add further discussion of the needs and the existing programs and needs of our institutions regarding our initiative. With that, we will turn to.
I'm sorry, uh-huh. I have one more, sure. For new business. Uh-huh. I'd like to hear from the institutions with athletic departments. I'd like to know how they're discussing power-based violence with their athletes. So I don't know if that's, you know, let's get together with the coaches, or do we want to hear from the coaches? But I'm curious to know the institutions with athletics, how is this being discussed? Thank you.
All right, Elizabeth Gunn, for the record. So we have some recommendations: marketing, awareness, outreach to campus. Maybe there was implied in that conversation some sort of measure of optimal engagement or optimal awareness, trying to determine what that is. potentially mapping out a timeline for a subsequent survey through all the appropriate approvals channels, et cetera, engaging with institutions, athletics departments regarding power-based violence. All right, we will move to agenda item 8. Turn to Associate General Counsel for that item.
Is there any public comment in Reno?
No comment in Reno.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, SCS, is there any public comment on the phone line?
No.
Chair, that concludes the second session of public comment.
Elizabeth Gunn for the record. All right, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all for your participation today, for your expertise as always, and for the robust conversation that moves some of our work and initiatives forward. And I hope you all have a nice rest of the week and weekend ahead.